Okay, Greg, I'm looking for you. Let's see which one you were. Is that you, Greg? I just unmuted you. Is that one, Greg? Greg Duffel. So where are you, Greg?
The radio effect internet effect.
He does do that. But listen to this, Greg. This also sounds like the old international connection with you and Daniel trying to get the show going.
That's what I thought. I thought this is just like CKLN. Nothing's working. You know, there are lots of little problems here and there, you know. Except the difference, I think the difference with CKLN was that this kind of problem sounds like it could be, you know, there's obviously a lot of technology going on with this show, and Bill is of course a master. I don't know how he figures all this out. CKLN was sort of a simpler operation. It should have worked. It should have been put into place, but somehow every week it was a different situation and didn't work. But yeah, it does sound like this. Sound like us trying to get to do things. We've got a 2-hour show to do, and most of the time is spent sort of trying to overcome all of these insurmountable problems, not being able to get people on the phone and so on. But at least we made it entertaining. Other people would just freeze up. Yep. Like Norman Otis Richman would just go, CKLN, you are listening to 88.1 FM. Just CKLN. He'd have nothing to say. He couldn't extemporize on anything. You know, he'd just be doing call letters.
That's right.
It was terrible. You know, I mean, there was no insight into what was going on. There
what's
was no
more
emotion.
Terrible. Great. You know what's more terrible? You have hours
what?
Of that recorded.
I know.
You actually
I know.
Recorded
I've got,
the guy doing that.
I've had it all. It's all archived here. All of this miserable radio is archived. It's a unique archive.
That's the Leisure Society, man. Who had time before the last 30 years to do that? I mean, look, it's incredible. You spent days.
Ah, but Bob, it was really for legal reasons.
Yes. Yes.
Remember?
Yes. One had to. You were
had to
in a fight.
Protect yourself.
You were in a fight. That's right.
Yeah,
there.
No, we were in a. It was a street fight.
Yep. Okay, so, Bill, it doesn't look like anybody is... I saw Ira's and Era's name come up, Bill, and on your number, 602. Is that Era? Or is that you, Bill?
No, that was me. I just, whenever they call in and I patch them through here, I type their name in so you know who it is.
Right.
Can you see me?
I typed at the studio.
Right.
Does Bill see me there?
Yes, you're blocked. Your call blocked, and then name is unknown.
Yeah, I'm the unknown one.
Yeah.
So yeah. Bill sees that, huh?
You see that?
Yeah.
The Turbo Bridge.
There's an anonymous, and there's an unknown, and there's
the unknown
Greg.
Is me.
Yeah, and then there's Greg Sanders,
and Greg
is not talking, so I think he can't get through.
Either that or a lot of times, particularly with a cell phone, they'll hang up and it won't clear off the board. So that might have happened,
too. Yes, that's right. Yeah, okay, a new anonymous came in. Can you speak anonymous? I just unmuted you. It just came in.
Give them a few seconds. They're still hearing the intro.
Oh, they're on delay? Oh,
well, no,
yeah, they're registering.
They pop up on the board quite a few seconds before they can actually hear the show.
Okay, we learned something. All right.
Yeah, because the whole spiel, you know, when you phone in, there's an explanation that you can listen for as long as you want, or you can participate, and if you want to raise your hand, you press *5, and then you have to press, give your name. Your name is recorded. I don't know how that figures in. And then you press the pound button, and then you're in. But,
what about that name thing, Bill?
Yeah, like if you look under Greg Sanders, a little arrow, if you click on that, you'll hear whatever they recorded.
Oh, okay.
Or like on yours.
Yeah, you learned something there, Bob, right?
Yep, I didn't know
look
that.
Look at the power you have.
Well, Bill, he doesn't inform me. I'm just starting to get my power after 10 years.
I know. Maybe he thinks that. Maybe he just thinks that some things need to be kept from you.
Yes, I think he does. But
until you ask, you know, because to tell you this would only maybe he thinks maybe it would confuse you.
Yep. He's not used to very bright hosts of shows electrically. He isn't. They're terrible.
So.
They're terrible. They're nature lovers. They're Luddites.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. At CKLN, people, like, there were people that were doing the programs there, and Daniel and I would be just, you know, amazed that they would go into that studio and no one had any headphones. And there were no headphones supplied by the station. And if they did supply a pair of headphones, of course it would be immediately stolen. So we brought in all of our own equipment and we had headphones. And we'd say to people, well, you know, if you want to, or they'd come in and they'd say, hey, can we borrow your headphones? Like, we'd be finished our program, and they say, can we borrow your headphones? And I go, well, okay, but, you know, we're going to be leaving.
Yeah.
And they'd go, oh, well, we'll leave them here for you. And go, no, that's not going to work.
Right.
They're going to be immediately stolen.
Yes.
So, because those are the kind of people that did programs there, thieves and charlatans. So we would, at the time, there was a store up, an electronics store, up on College Street, College and Spadina, for those of you that know, in Toronto. And it used to be a haven or for electronic stores. There were lots of stores there. And people would just flock to these places, and they'd have amazing sales and so on. Of course, those days are completely over. So we're talking about, you know, 10, 14 years ago or something. And this one store was selling headphones for, I think, $1 a piece. And they were really quite, you know, they were serviceable. You know, quite good. And I think if you bought something there, they'd say, oh, you can get a headphone for $1. They must have had, like, a warehouse full of these headphones. And they were quite good for our purposes. And so we'd say to people, look, go to the store, and you get a nice pair of headphones for $1. And I don't think anybody went there to get them. Preferred to borrow ours.
You know,
or some people would say, yeah.
It occurs to me most of those DJs were probably stoned when they came in. And
I guess so. Here's the other excuse they gave.
Oh, there's Anonymous. Anonymous has got a red vibe. Who's that, Anonymous? Speak.
No.
We hear your... Hello, who's that?
There's somebody there.
Yeah. Who's that?
Someone.
Oh.
Is that
someone?
Deb? Deb from Boston?
Maybe.
Oh, no, we're not talking to you. Okay, I'm going to mute her. We'll talk
later.
What,
you don't like her?
No, she's ridiculous. Deb comes in.
More ridiculous than I am?
No. Yeah, she pretends to be a mystery bitch. But we tolerate her sometimes, but not for at the beginning of the show. Only when we run out of all energy. Yeah. No.
It does sound. It did sound sort of a strange energy. I won't characterize it by any particular good or bad or anything. Just strange.
Yes, you could see that.
So anyway.
Okay.
What was
so I'm
saying?
Just
going
to mute you, Deb. If you stay, that's fine. We'll talk to you maybe later. Okay, Deb. Okay.
Yeah, don't take it personally.
Now, I want to say, these people come in stone. Now, Greg, the significant thing is, this ghetto called CKLN, the most amazing radio came out of there, thanks to yours truly. Now, this is an example of the modern version of Jesus. He was supposed to be a guy hanging out with the tavern and the lowlife, right? It was, like, very bad where he hung out. At least in his PR, they said he hung out. I did the same fucking thing. I hung out at the low life of urban culture. Really?
I mean, I don't know much about Jesus, frankly. But wasn't there some...
Are you Jewish,
suggestion?
Greg? You're half-Jewish? Were you?
Well, that's immaterial.
Oh, you're NDP. That's right. You're NDP, socialist atheist.
wasn't it sort of inferred that some of the people that Jesus hung out with were, dare I say it, prostitutes?
Yes. And
yeah.
There was certainly that kind of ilk in a modern sense, because your expose of CKLN was all these people were prostituting themselves through their shows to get gigs in clubs and get some money. That's what they were doing.
Correct.
They were
and I don't know whether I want to. I don't know whether I want to characterize this person necessarily as a quote unquote prostitute, but there was a person at CKLN whose day job, I suppose, or could have been a night job as well at times, was, shall we say, working in a dungeon. And involved cat of nine tails, tying people up and doing various things to them. So that was indeed a component of one of the people.
How'd you know that?
Well, I think that what happened was that we sort of knew that, but Daniel, I think like she would say this, but of course people say lots of things, and it was a bit difficult to verify it. And
you're talking
so
about...
She'd be calling like a dom. Like basically, she more or less said she was a dominatrix.
Right. Her name began with B.
Yes, that's correct.
I know who you are. And good friend of yours. Good friend of yours.
Yes. For a while there, yes.
Yes.
And until we took it all away from her. and actually the dungeon that I believe she either works at even to this day, as I think I saw her recently,
mm-hmm.
Or if it was not her, where she did find employment doing this kind of thing, it's actually just up the road from where I am. It's on the street quite near here, and I could be assailed with a cat of nine tails if I so wished, within, I don't know, 5 minute bike ride, really.
Wow. Okay.
But anyway, the other thing that getting back to the people with no headphones, what they said, if we said, well, why don't you use headphones? Because they couldn't monitor what was going on. Things were always going wrong because they could never actually hear what was going on over the air. They said, oh, I don't like using headphones because I prefer listening through the speakers because it's more organic.
Sounds like Carolyn. That sounds like
we
Carolyn
never stuff. Understood that. We never understood that idea that something that listening through headphones would be less organic than listening.
Well, that's stone talk. That's,
I guess so. Yeah,
that's marijuana-induced sensitivity.
Yeah,
yeah. See, they.
Daniel was once just getting back to the dominatrix thing. Once Daniel foolishly
going forward. Don't say getting back. Let's go going forward to the dominatrix.
Going forward. going forward. Daniel once made the error of challenging this person, and then ended up on the air being beaten. Physically beaten.
I missed that one.
Because, do you remember that one?
No, I don't recall that at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, on the air. On the air. She went in to, on his side of the
glass.
You know, the glass, and started, like, beating him.
Like, with the whip or her hands?
No, with her physically, with her hands. And like slapping him on his rear end.
Yeah.
Like spanking him.
Right.
She said you can't spank me or something like that. And he says, oh, don't challenge me. Don't challenge me. And he says, I'm going to give you one more chance. And he kept going, saying that she wouldn't do it. And she just went right in there and did it. And over the air, he was like screaming and yelling.
It hurt.
In pain.
It hurt.
In pain. I mean, I don't know whether he was putting it on, but he was, you heard the contact and you heard his yelping.
Okay. That reminds me, Greg, have you talked to him about access to broadcasting some of the archives?
Do you know I haven't done that? I should.
You should. You have to do that.
I should. I mean, the thing is that some of the archives, I believe, are fair game in the sense that Daniel wasn't involved.
Yeah. Just our show. So, the one. Remember, he took a hiatus and I was on.
That's right. So I believe those are fair game.
Yeah. So let's do that. Now, let's I want to talk about your messages last week about Zappa and 200 Motels and the animation. But before we do that, I had a letter which was just emailed to me earlier today. And it reminds me of your life when you would get emails. Now, this is a pretty regular listener. His name is Gene. But he has not written me in a year or two. He used to be part of the show. The one thing we bonded over was that he grew up in New Jersey in the 60s, so he went to the Garrick Theater in the Village and saw Zappa in the summer of 67 doing the famous 5-6 month run of a play called Absolutely Free, Pigs and Repugnant. And it's a legendary performance by Zappa's band, and that's how they really got big on the East Coast, because New York had all the music publicity. So they saw Frank, realized he was a genius, and he started to spread his renown. So Jim didn't realize something. He blew it. He went once or twice, but he didn't know that he could go and talk to Frank backstage or that there were afternoon shows. He missed really consuming a lot of it. So he always regretted that. But at least he saw it once or twice. So I haven't heard from Jim in a while, so look at this. He says, "Hi, Bob. I've been thinking about frequency because we have to change ours if we're to survive the EMP or whatever the catastrophe will be." So he's talking about the catastrophe that Ion predicted back in May 5th, 2010. EMP will affect computers all over the planet, and a lot of people will die. So he says, "I've been thinking about frequency because we have to change ours if we're to survive the EMP or whatever the catastrophe will be." And we say, if you take the drops in our products, that changes your frequency. So then he says, there's a YouTube called, quote, "How to Change Your Frequency" by Christy Marie Sheldon. Now, this reminds me of your kind of world, Greg, when you're on the show. Somebody, I never heard of this person, but we've got our feelers out there, like Jim in this case, and he finds this obscure YouTube, okay? How to change your frequency. So he says, "So I checked it out because I realized I'm living in a cardboard box." He's quoting Ion there, how we're all living in a cardboard box and rather limited. So he says, "I'm living in a cardboard box because of my frequency, and I'm going to have to learn how to change my frequency at will if I want the situation to change." Now, he doesn't seem to understand that, no, you don't have to change your frequency. Your frequency is being changed by the world situation that Ion has caused. You just need the RNA drops to help you adapt to the frequency and feel comfortable with it. So this is typical misunderstanding. I don't know if he's listening, but it's not a good sign. He's listened a lot. They can't get the basics here. But look at this. Then he says, "In my copy of The Essential Mae Russell." Now, have you ever seen that book, Greg?
No.
Yeah, you can order it. It's a collection of articles and all kinds of stuff in Mae Russell. Finally, someone did one. But this is typical of our audience. This guy has the book. This is pretty good, huh.
That is pretty good.
After he screwed up on the frequency, you know, some people aren't too good on the Ion level, but they're good on the Holy Offices level. In this case, the Holy Office of Mae Brussel. "In my copy of The Essential Mae Brussel, she is interviewed by Conspiracy Digest." I remember them. "In the 70s, 1978 in brackets, who poses the first question, quote, so this is... where seems to be a long statement, so here it goes. Conspiracy Digest says, "The study of conspiracy seems to indicate that the laws of reality give the dedicated conspirators the upper hand against anyone with any version of social reform in mind." So conspiracy seems to indicate that they have the upper hand. Then they continue. "Another way of looking at it is that evil has a better feedback loop than good. The loot gained by conspiracy puts power in the hands of a few conspirators who then can undertake even vaster conspiracies to further enhance their power. The fruits of, quote, good, unquote, movements, on the other hand, are widely dispersed among the people rather than being concentrated and available for further success." He doesn't have any quotes, but let's assume that's it, because he shifts to another topic. So unless this sentence relates to it, but that seems to be the question. because he down further he has Mabe Russell's answer. But before he gets to Mabe Russell's answer, he says, "You seemed surprised, Bob, recently when you realized that Susanna was genuinely a bit shocked at how evil this world is." Suzanne, you've talked to Suzanne. She likes you, Greg. Suzanne out of Dallas area with San Antonio. Mm-hmm. She was shocked. She read up on the Nazis coming over somewhere at the end of World War II. And she was shocked about, this is actually Mabe Russell kind of information. And it really affected her. She usually doesn't get bothered by bad news, but it bothered her. So, Jim is saying, Bob, you were shocked that Susanna didn't realize how evil the world is. Okay, so that's the theme here, but lay out what he says. You seemed surprised, Bob, recently when you realized that Susanna was genuinely a bit shocked at how evil this world is, has been for as long as anybody can remember. The actions of the Dulles brothers and all the rest. Yes, the Dulles brothers, they brought over the Galen, Reinhard Galen network. So Susanna was shocked at the history of the Dulles people. So then he says, Mabe Russell must have been an optimist for most of her life. No, I would say Mabe Russell just had a sunny disposition. She could look in and see the horror of things and be bothered by it, but she didn't let it really bring her down personally. So Mabe Russell, he says, must have been an optimist for most of her life. Maybe right before her death, she finally realized that we never had a chance in this world. She answers, okay, so this answer has nothing to do with her death. This is in 1978. She died 10 years later. So that thought is not really relevant to the issue here. So here's what she says to the Conspiracy Digest. There are also philosophical, literary, and historical examples where evil does not have a better feedback loop than good. The laws of reality do not guarantee that power gained from force and monopoly will be lasting or of any long-range value to those who have struggled to obtain that power, unquote. Then Jim says, Compensation, an essay by Ralph Waldo Emerson, describes my views on evil, power, and the attempted manipulations of mankind and nature. So he's saying he's a pessimist, and he thinks May is optimistic, but no. May is just noticing that reality is not monocrop one way or the other. There are breakthroughs in history. There are philosophical, literary, and historical examples where evil does not have a better feedback loop than good. Then Jim goes into another topic. Sometime late in 2011, too late for me, right, sometime late in 2011, too late for me, is when I believe I requested a session with Ion. So if it was December 2011, he wouldn't have got a session. But Ion was on the air for 3 years, 2014 to 2017, and he could have called at any time. So maybe he did, but anyways, he says, so I'm thinking it must have been in very early 2012 when you called me at about 9:20 p.m. to tell me that Ion would be available for a while, but that I could become a member of Dupes if I was interested. Okay. So I called him out of the blue one day and said Ion would talk to him. He says, I still had a job and was actually thinking more that I'd better get to bed soon than this was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to speak with the greatest human being who ever existed. Well, no, Ion's not the greatest human being who ever existed. I'm the greatest human being.
No, I know.
Yeah, Ion is something else.
He's not clear.
Yeah, see, so now he's a heavy dope smoker, and maybe he became a junkie back then. Now, yeah, I think he became a junkie. It ruined him for a few years. So, you know, it's got some damage here on the attention level. He's saying that he said, I better get to bed for my job rather than talk to the greatest situation. He said, you could tell that I wanted to keep it short, but you did say something extraordinary before we ended the call. You told me, quote, we're going to make a new civilization. Well, I've said that many times. We're going to make a new civilization. I don't know how I answered you, but lately I'm thinking that the way you're going to make a new civilization is you're going to change the frequency. Now, he's right there. That's right. That's what Ion's doing, and we're providing antidotes to that. Adjusting to the new change in frequency. So he comes back to his frequency theme again. I've just been thinking a lot lately about frequency, and he puts it in italics. with all the evidence that made Russell accumulate throughout her life, and wondering if we're just living in an evil world like hell. Are we wondering if we're just living in an evil world like hell, or maybe or purgatory? And there's a parallel of this world where the frequency is different, and there's actually peace, and no wars or evil. But here, it really seems like we never had a chance. Okay, what's interesting? Ian does talk about the collision of worlds that is in the TV show Fringe, and I think it's the collision Ion means of heaven and earth, the two zones coming together. So it's heaven, which is the guff, which is just no a place of bliss and no creativity. It wants to experience creativity, so it's merging with us. So he's got, it is a parallel world, but again, for the amount of time he's listened to us, he should say it better. He should know what I'm saying. So then he says, just some musings. So all that was just musing. See, that's the problem there, Greg. They're fucking just musing. They don't do any fucking solid thinking or check out the facts. So it's lazy, but maybe ex-heroin person is just happy to be alive and to appear to be thinking. So he says, to change the subject, I want to comment on the beautiful women in the TV show Nikita.
Oh, yeah.
Is that?
In Canada, isn't it?
I don't know. Nikita. I saw Nikita, but there were several variations of Nikita. And we actually...
Okay, I think he's talking about the television series that was made in Canada or had a Canadian actress or something. TV series. Nikita is an American television series that aired on the CW.
Are you reading something or you're... Just...
I'm reading something. It aired on the CW from... September 9th, 2010 to December 27th, 2013 in the United States. It's an adaptation of the 1990 Luc Besson film, Nikita. The second such adaptation after the popular 1997 TV series, La Femme Nikita.
Okay, I may have seen, I know I didn't see La Femme, but going down to the plot...
Just incidentally, I was thinking of the show La Femme Nikita, which was indeed made in Canada and starred Peta Wilson, and also, actually I'm looking at the credits here, based on Nikita by Luc Besson, the director, the French director, and it also starred Don Franks.
I knew Don Franks.
Did you know Don Franks?
From Toronto, yeah. He was the archetypal hippie in the 60s. They did a documentary on him.
Yeah. Well, I worked with Don Franks.
Oh, there we go. We have something.
I worked with Don Franks.
And he lived near me, you know. He lived just off the corner of St. Clair and Bathurst. Just about the subway there. Yeah.
No, I knew Don Franks well enough that if I saw him in the street, you know, I'd say hello and, you know, he sort of knew me, you know?
Then where did
we
work
together. I did voices on the cartoon series Inspector Gadget.
Wow, that's incredible. That we go ridiculously from this guy's letter, we found out we have something in common from way back that we never would have known.
Yeah, and I did. So this would have been, I would have been doing these voices around 1983.
Yeah.
In the year 1983, I did 64 half-hour programs where I did some of the voices in this TV show called Inspector Gadget. And there were only about four or five of us doing voices on it, and one of the people was Don Franks. And we recorded everything separately, and so I would be finishing my... I don't know why we did that, but anyway, I guess... For money reasons or something, I would finish my session, and it'd be quite common that the next person that would be coming in would be Don Franks, and he'd be sitting. He was the quintessential hippie,
right? And what did he do? Why would he be coming in to do what?
He'd be coming in to do his contributions. They would record all of the pieces separately. So we would never be in the studio, all of us at the same time, acting as if, let's say, it were a radio program. all of the dialogue would be done in an isolated fashion, which I don't think is very good for the, you know, for the project, but I guess it was easier for them to produce it that way, and
right.
and it avoided having everybody in at the same time. I guess they thought it would take less time, although I'm not even sure of that. But anyway, Don Franks would come in, and I'd see him as I was doing my part in the thing. You know, Don would arrive near the end of the session and would be out in the area outside beyond the glass where I was, and he'd be waiting.
You.
And his
He'd see you working.
Oh, yeah, and we'd chat, you know. And after, you know, I'd come out after I was done, and I'd chat. I'd say hello to Don and say hello to me, and we'd chat a bit. And, I mean, and his daughter, whose name was Cree Summer.
Yeah.
Who would have been, I guess, maybe 8 or 9 around this time, maybe a bit older. I really don't know. But anyway, she was... The deal, I guess, that had been made by Don was that he would be involved in this program doing voices, and that his daughter would be the female lead, really, playing Inspector Gadget's, I don't know, associate, I suppose you'd say. I'm not sure quite what her relationship was to Inspector Gadget, but she was there to, it was a kid portion of the show, right?
Right.
Where kids are supposed to identify with what's going on. And so she also was involved in doing the voices, and she later went on to have a bit of a career, and still, I suppose, in Hollywood. She was in a TV show, an American television show that the title escapes my memory now, but anyway, her name was Cree Summer Franks, and I think she, you know, she wanted to be, or she saw how much money Don made with residuals, I guess. So.
Yeah.
But Don died, 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, I'm looking at his thing, and he died in 2016.
Right.
2 years ago. Now, there's a couple of points here. It's getting tangled and involved and synchronistic here. Let me see what...
the other thing, Bob, I just wanted to say, looking at the credits of La Femme Nikita, now this is the Canadian television show that was produced in the late 90s, there's a another connection here. The theme music was composed by Mark Snow.
I don't know that.
Oh, yeah? Do you know who Mark Snow is?
No.
Mark Snow is related to David Lynch.
No, I don't
and
know.
I've got that wrong. I've got that wrong. Who did the work for, he did the X-Files.
Dad Lamenti did the work for Lynch.
What? Okay, Mark Snow did the, that's what I'm getting mixed up here. Mark Snow did the music for the X-Files. That's where I recognize the...
And what's that got to do? Why are you mentioning him?
Oh, I thought it... I sort of was wrong and thought it had a relation to Lynch, you know?
Okay.
But he did the music for La Femme Nikita. X-Files did the music for La Femme Nikita.
Now I got it figured out here. See, I didn't see Nikita. I watched Nikita.
Okay.
Which is
later. That's a later television show.
Now, the woman in it, she's known as Maggie Q. That's her actress name.
Yeah.
The woman who played Nikita. Now, so I watched it for a few years, but I didn't finish the series. It wore out or I wasn't interested in it. But I'm watching a new series now, Designated Survivor, with Kiefer Sutherland.
Right. That's a Canadian. That's technically a Canadian program, right?
Well, there seems to be, I can recognize the housing. It's in, you know, Toronto. It's where it's filmed.
Yeah, it's filmed here.
Yeah. You knew that?
I did know that.
Did they show him in the gossip columns, Kiefer Sutherland?
No, I think Daniel once said that he was walking around in his area where he lives, and he was, there was a film shoot. I guess it was in Allen Gardens.
Hmm.
And he, which is quite near here where I am, and he asked what they were shooting, and they said, oh, we're shooting this Designated Survivor.
Okay, so, and he didn't know what that was.
If he didn't, I think I did.
But he told you, and you knew the name. Okay, so
yeah.
So I'm watching it. I'm almost finished the second season. I think it got canceled, but then it's potentially going to have a third season somewhere else. But I overall don't like it. It came in like in just before Election Day in 2016, and it was Hollywood, you know, the liberal gang, saying, uh-oh, Trump might win. We've got to create an alternative. A West Wing, you know, that TV show for the Bush era or whenever that West Wing was. We're going to have to counter the Trump presidency. So they take a guy becomes president by accident, but then he's the exact opposite of Trump. He's very nice and considerate and sickening. And the only show I liked Kiefer in was 24. I didn't like his one with the young psychic kid, whatever that was called. So I started watching it, and pretty quickly, Kiefer is not doing very good acting, and it's pretty obvious what the motive is. But I want to see what they're doing with it. So don't like it. But what I did like was Maggie Q, who I remembered from Nikita, who, and I haven't seen her in a long time. I don't know if she's been on any shows. But she was, anytime they showed her, she was the James Bond out there solving the problems for the president, you know, with the violent world. And her dilemmas were interesting. So Karen and I were talking about, remember Nikita? Well, she's back, and she's the best part of the show. And then they go from her dramatic fights to really mundane conversations by Kiefer. So here we are looking at Maggie Q, and that's of interest to me right now, is Maggie Q and how much he can keep the show afloat. And I can't wait to finish the next four episodes. I got 19, 20, 21, 22 to do, and it's over. But it's real.
Maggie Q is the one of three sexiest vegans of 2017, by the way.
Oh, is that what she is? Vegan, okay, vegan.
PETA declared her to be one of three sexiest vegans of 2017. She's an Hawaiian.
No, isn't she from Thailand or Vietnam?
No, she was born
her mother's
in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Yes.
And her father is of Irish and Polish descent, and her mother is a Vietnamese immigrant. Her parents met while her father was stationed in Vietnam during the Vietnam War.
Right, and she was raised Catholic. Okay, so
she's a Catholic.
There's a Hawaii connection there, which is interesting.
Yes.
But the she was born on May 22nd, 1979. That's the day that Joe Clark beat Trudeau.
Oh, yeah.
Let me just check that. I want to really check that, because I was watching Dinah Shore. Zappa was on, and Zappa was sort of edgy with Peaches and Herb, a black duo.
Right.
Who did mainstream black music. And Zappa, who my thesis was that Zappa satirized black music sometimes. And that satirical thing about black music came out in his exchange through Dinah Shore with Peaches and Herb. So it really showed something there that I think about and could go into talking about what Zappa was and how he was different from the mainstream music industry. But it also reminded me, I think that's the day that Joe Clark won. That was a shocking day for
Canadians. Well, if on YouTube, I have just found the 1979 Frank Zappa funny interview with Dinah Shore USA TV May 18th.
Wow, May 18th? Yes, but that could have been broadcast.
Wow, this is an incredibly bad video copy, but nevertheless, it's there.
We could hear it? We could
I'm watching it right now.
Okay.
I'm watching it right now.
Okay, let me just check. I'm checking the date. Joe Clark, Jesus, I got a teacher in New Jersey. Okay, go back. Look for Joe Clark. Where's Joe Clark? Wikipedia. He came to power in a 1979 election. If we click on that, May 22nd. I always remembered that. So on May 22nd, 79, he beat Trudeau. That was a big upset in Canadian history. You remember that? I don't know if you were tuned in then, but it was a big deal.
What date was it?
May 22nd, 79.
Mm.
And that day, on that day, Maggie Q was born, I guess, in Hawaii. Now, what was the point you were bringing up? The dinosaur seems to be called May 18th, but see, maybe I saw it. That's right. If I recorded on
possible.
The 18th, and then
here it is. Here it is. I'm just going to someone talking about it. I hope this doesn't give it away, but someone says this is a post from what's unclear when it was from, but. Oh, I see. It's from March 28th, 2003. And it's the subject is Zappa on Dinah Shore Show. Quote, I remember many years ago when Frank Zappa was a guest on the Dinah Shore Show. The other guest included Peaches and Herb.
Yep.
Frank was sitting across from them and was, in his own way, bashing disco.
Ah!
And they didn't realize what he was doing, that he was doing it. It was the funniest thing to hear and see. They were agreeing with him, and they didn't know what they were agreeing with.
That's right. I remember it. See, I'm right. I said that, right? I said what you just described.
Yeah, yeah. And then here's actually Frank Zappa on this place I found. It's an interview in BAM magazine. And the question to Frank was, you were on the TV talk show Dinah recently. What was that like? Frank Zappa. It was really amusing. There was no communication whatsoever. I was on the same show with Peaches and Herb, the Bee Gees' mother and father, this girl named Wren something or other, who sings in the movie Hair, Wren Woods, and Jan and Dean. They called me up and said they'd read about this Jewish princess bullshit, and they wanted me to get down there and talk about it. I said, okay. So I went down there, and apparently Dinah Shore got a hold of the lyrics to Jewish Princess just before we went on the air, and it offended her so much that they never discussed it once all the time I was on the show. And then after the show was over, she came up to me and said, why did you write that?